Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's New Year's Eve, Thursday the 31st of December. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link. I'm your host, Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, Germany. Today in the program, voters in the Central African Republic cast their ballots in presidential and legislative elections on Wednesday.
Managing this entire exercise has been a huge challenge for the authorities, but more so, it's been a success. It's been free and fair, as far as we can see.
The International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda closes its doors. Was it successful in dispensing justice?
This tribunal, in our view, changed around the way the international community responded to mass atrocities.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
We begin the program in Central African Republic, where thousands voted on Wednesday in national elections. Residents turned up at polling stations amid hopes that a new president will lead the country to stability after years of violence. An estimated 2 million people were eligible to vote. 30 candidates are vying for presidency to replace interim president Catherine Samba-Panza. Voting was monitored by UN peacekeepers after violence erupted earlier this month. Polling stations opened late and voters complained about insufficient ballots. Katharina Höye in Bangui filed this report.
Voters in Bangui were caught between hope and doubt when polling stations opened on Wednesday morning. The elections, however, were organized in less than perfect circumstances and fears. In the neighborhood Kester, next to the airport, Philippe Adum, a lawyer, waited since early morning hours to cast his vote.
Security and peace. These are fundamental conditions for development. Without peace and security, nothing can work. It's the vote to have a regular head of state and regular institutions like the parliament, and have new people who can, you know, try to manage this country.
Polling stations were supposed to open at 6 a.m. on Wednesday. However, logistical problems delayed the vote. At one polling station near the city center, party representatives were denied access. At another station, voters whose last name started at N, M or O couldn't vote.
There's some disorder. Some voters can't find their polling bureau. Others could not find their names on the voters list. Some voters have gone home. Even I can't seem to find the right office. Mustafa Ibrahim, an electoral worker in the Muslim-majority neighborhood, PK5.
The pressure is high on authorities and CAR's international partners to make the vote as well as possible. Even if the elections run smoothly and a majority of voters can vote, there are fears that political actors or armed groups might contest the vote if they are not seen as credible.
Maintenant, c'est une œuvre humaine. Donc elle est...
It's a human effort. Naturally, it will be imperfect. Our goal is to do everything in our power to make sure the elections are credible and that as many people as possible can vote under the best conditions possible.
La plus effective possible.
Parfait, on a again the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in the CAR.
Among the 30 candidates for president, three are considered as front runners. Two of them, Martin Sigile and Anicet Doolugale, were prime ministers in the late presidents Ange Félix Patassé. The third, Kerry Mekaswa, is a Muslim who served as a minister under President François Bozizé until the Lekki rebels ousted Bozizé in 2013. In Bangui, UN peacekeepers, police and French security personnel guarded polling stations. In Pekasank, where votes were cast in a referendum on a new constitution 2 weeks ago under heavy gunfire, the population now voted in peace. The real issue is whether or not voters outside the capital will have been able to vote. Some polling stations are only reachable by boat or motorbike. About 1.8 million Central Africans are registered to vote out of a population of roughly 4.5 million. Preliminary results are expected in a couple of days. A second round with the frontrunners from the Wednesday's vote is scheduled for the end of January.
Katharina Höye in Bangui. Polls in the Central African Republic began to close without any reports of violence. For more on the elections, I spoke to Ayo Johnson, a freelance journalist, and first wanted to find out his view on the way the election was conducted.
I think the elections so far have shown promise because there was a lot of concerns that there was going to be a lot of irregularities, that the ballot itself may never happen, seeing that as far back as February of 2015, four times the elections have been cancelled or postponed. And to have got to this stage where elections are physically happening has been an achievement. But we've had some constraints. Ballot papers didn't materialize in some areas pretty quickly. The logistical issues, as we all know, ballot papers not arriving on time, and of course huge security concerns for those who are governing the elections, but this electoral commission, but also ultimately for the vast majority of citizens who were in queues lining up patiently to cast their votes. So managing this entire exercise has been a huge challenge for the authorities, but more so it's been a success. It's been free and fair as far as we can see, but most also peacefully.
There's a lot of hope that this election will usher in peace and stability in the CAR. What is your take on that?
I think it shows that the Central African Republic is prepared to work for peace because there's been not an amnesty, but at least a nationwide call for the arms to be brought back to the fore, for the various militia groups to disarm. It would appear that there still are a significant amount of arms still left in the community, and both on the Muslim militia and Christian militias still have those. And that's a worry for the authorities moving forward. It remains to be seen. We are moving into untested, uncharted territory.
So how confident are you that the final results will be acceptable by all parties?
To be honest with you, it is unlikely to be accepted by all parties. In fact, to start with, another faction that we haven't spoken about is the military. They're not physically involved, which we would hope they're not, but they're disquiet. We've seen in the past where they've shown a lack of appreciation for governments. They seem to take the rules and laws into their own hands and do things at their will. But I think we can confidently say that the vast majority of those who are likely to win are mainly Christians. So how much would Muslims, which are in the minority, feel confidence that another Christian leader, if that's the case, may at least be able to protect them?
And what role should the French military and UN peacekeepers play?
We've seen how peacekeepers, for all good intentions, when they've come on the ground, they've either been caught up in this internal fighting between Christians and Muslims in terms of sexual violence, and they themselves have found themselves either on one side or one camp or the other. We are always going to have this cycle of distrust. So that in itself is a challenge for peacekeepers, but ultimately for the communities who are on the ground, whose leaderships and their leadership structures have to play a very pivotal role in deciding how they should respond when things do not necessarily go their way. That's all part of good governance.
I was speaking to Ayo Johnson, a freelance journalist.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
A court specially set up to try those responsible for the Rwandan genocide of 1994 closes its doors today. The Rwandan genocide claimed nearly a million lives in just under 100 days. At the beginning of 1995, the UN Security Council passed a resolution setting up the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, based in Arusha, Tanzania. But how successful was it in dispensing justice for the slaughter of mostly Tutsis by Hutu extremists when between 800,000 and 1 million people were systematically hunted down and murdered? This report by Antonio Kashkaish is presented by Christina Krippel.
At the beginning of 1995, the UN Security Council passed the resolution setting up the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, ICTR, based in Arusha, Tanzania. It was an experiment in international justice which formally comes to an end after 21 years when the tribunal closes this Thursday. Geraldine Mattioli-Zeltner from Human Rights Watch told DW the ICTR made an important contribution to the prosecution internationally of crimes against humanity.
It's an important institution that's closing its doors. This tribunal, in our view, changed around the way the international community responded to mass atrocities.
In 1998, the ICTR became the first international criminal court to hand down a conviction for genocide. Around 80% of the prime suspects in the Rwandan genocide were arrested and put on trial. 93 suspects were charged, 61 were found guilty, 14 were acquitted. Most observers agree that the ICTR has, by and large, accomplished the tasks that were assigned to it. Although not everything went according to plan, says the ICTR's prosecutor, Boubacar Diallo.
Sure, a lot remains to be done. We have 9 people indicted who have not been arrested yet. United Nations member states must cooperate more fully in these cases.
The ICTR also has its critics. In particular, they complain that the activities of Tutsi rebel leaders, who are now high-ranking public figures in Rwanda, have not been investigated at all in the last 20 years, says Mathioli Zeltner from Human Rights Watch.
The tribunal did not try one single case of crimes committed by the Rwandan Patriotic Front. The Rwandan Patriotic Front was an armed group led by Paul Kagame that stopped the genocide in 1994 and has been in power since 1994 in Rwanda.
Another criticism leveled against the ICTR is that it was extremely expensive to run. Over 21 years, it cost the international community 1.8 billion euros. Still, investigations into atrocities and the prosecution of those criminally responsible for them will continue after the ICTR closes. Trials, mainly of civilians, are still going on in Rwanda and abroad. One such trial ended in Frankfurt on Tuesday with a life sentence for Onesfor Rua Bukombe, whom a German court found guilty of organizing and carrying out a massacre in 1994.
That report was filed by Antonio Kashkaish. Christians and Muslims in Cameroon are jointly celebrating the new year to encourage tolerance in a country that has suffered much from religious extremism. Imams are joining pastors and priests to pray for God's protection for the country in the new year. Moki Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
O Allah, nous te prions et te demandons de rétablir la paix.
O Allah, we are craving for peace, security and stability in our beloved country, Cameroon. We are pleading for your protection from enemies of progress. O Allah, grant wisdom to our President Paul Biya and our military so that they can totally eliminate the terrorist group Boko Haram from our country.
That is the voice of Muslim cleric Ibrahima Tukur of the Etudi Mosque in Cameroon's capital Yaoundé, preaching to Christians of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Cameroon. He has been granted 5 minutes to preach in one of several church services to mark the end of the year 2015 and celebrate the new year. At the Cameroon Baptist Convention, CBC, one of the oldest Cameroonian churches, Pastor Chalmain Niteme, says they have also invited everyone, Muslims and Christians, to celebrate with them.
They do exchange of gifts. Some bring food even to the church. And after service, we have a common meal together. In fact, there is a variety. But the bottom line is that Christmas is a symbol, is a significance of the love of God for humanity.
20% of Cameroonians are Muslims, 40% Christians, and 40% follow indigenous beliefs. The country had a history of interfaith tolerance and peaceful coexistence until the Nigerian extremist group Boko Haram began attacking Cameroon in its efforts to create an Islamic state. Now, Cameroonians have organized joint church services for Christians and Muslims throughout the year 2016 to promote values like tolerance and brotherhood. Cameroon has been fighting a Boko Haram insurgency that spilled over into its territory 3 years ago. As they welcome 2016, it is their wish that peace and interfaith tolerance that has been a tradition in the country return and the strong ties they have enjoyed with their neighbor be re-established.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé. It's now time for Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Crime Fighters. Hello there, and welcome to Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers, brought to you by DW. The author is James Mahando, with a special contribution from South African crime writer Andrew Brown. Today, the story opens with the first episode entitled A Knife in the Chest. Come with us to a little African town called Bovu, the home of Patrick Ugunza and his wife Lucy. Patrick is 23 years old and used to work as a veterinarian, but he recently lost his job. Bovu is usually a quiet town, but right now there's a lot of commotion. Patrick and Lucy's neighbor has called the police. So what's going on? Join us and find out.
We received a call about a disturbance here. Yeah. Are you the one who made the call?
In there. It's not a disturbance. It's a bloodbath. My neighbor, the veterinarian, he's dead. Killed. Stabbed to death.
My goodness. I know the people who live here. It's Patrick and his wife, Lucy, right? What happened?
There she goes. She's trying to run away. Get her.
Hey.
Get her.
Stop. Lucy, where are you going? Quick, officer, catch her.
Yes, Detective Allen. Got you.
Leave me alone. I didn't do it.
Come on, let's go. Move.
I didn't do it, Allen. Please believe me.
Okay, Lucy. I'll talk to you later. Officer, please take her to the police station.
Yes, sir. Come on, let's go. Move. Mind your head. Get in.
All right, then. Better check out the crime scene. Has a forensics expert arrived yet? What's her name? Amanda? Samantha? Yeah, that's it. Sam. Ah, there she is. Good afternoon, Sam.
Oh, good afternoon, Detective Allen. Shall we get started?
Yeah, let's go to the crime scene. Oh, now this is horrific.
Are you okay, sir?
I'll be fine. It's just that I know this man. Let's get on with it.
Okay. Let me take a look.
Now, where did I put that tape recorder? Where? Here it is.
Victim is male, mid-20s. Probable cause of death? Stab wound to the chest. Rigor mortis hasn't set in yet, so the victim has been dead for less than 2 hours. We have to take the body to the morgue so I can examine it more closely.
Right.
Before I leave, I'll need to dust for fingerprints and take pictures of the crime scene.
Sure, go ahead. I'll talk to the neighbor who called us.
While the police are examining the crime scene, Mona, the victim's sister, is at her workplace in a hotel.
Oh, man.
Hey, what is it, Mona? You look frustrated.
I am frustrated, Judy. This job is frustrating.
Why? A few months ago, you thought your job here at the hotel was the best in the world.
A few months ago, there were lots of tourists who tipped really well. Now there's just Mr. Grumpy over there. He's our only client, and you know he never tips.
Tell me about it. Yesterday, the best he could manage was to offer me a drink he couldn't finish. How's that for tipping?
Well, I guess we shouldn't complain. At least we still have jobs. Not like Ruth and John who lost theirs.
Hey, you two! Are you just going to stand there like wet sex? I need some service at this table. What's wrong with you people? Unbelievable.
Uh-oh. There goes Mr. Grumpy again.
I'd better see what he wants. Come in, sir. Just a moment, please. Hello? Yes, she's here. Mona, it's for you.
Thanks, Judy. This is Mona. Hello? What? Patrick? Oh my God. No. No.
What is it, Mona?
It's my brother. He's been murdered.
Oh, Mona, I'm so sorry. Good no. heavens, what happened?
Meanwhile, Alan has taken Eunice to the police station. She's Lucy and Patrick's nosy old neighbor. She was the one who called the police to the crime scene, and Alan wants to know what exactly she saw.
Eunice Gamma, right?
Yes, officer.
I'm going to turn on the tape to record the interview. Is that okay?
Of course, young man. You go ahead.
Interview with Eunice Gamma, neighbor of the deceased Patrick Igunza, and his wife, suspect Lucy Igunza. All right. So, Eunice, please tell me exactly what happened.
His wife. She killed him.
How do you know it was her who killed Patrick?
I saw her through the window. She had the knife in her hands. That's when I called you.
Did you see her stab him?
She did it. I know she did.
But did you see the actual stabbing?
I peeped through the window, and there he was lying on the floor. And his wife was bent over his body holding the knife. Oh, there was blood everywhere.
But that doesn't necessarily mean she killed Patrick. She might have been trying to save him.
Young man, she's your killer, that Lucy. No question about it. The two were fighting earlier, and I heard her with my own two ears. She said, "I'll kill you, Patrick. I'll kill you."
And did she also say why she wanted to kill him?
Patrick was having an affair.
Oh, an affair? Do you know who with?
No, but I would hear him with the other woman when Lucy was at work. Patrick had been fired, you see. So he had plenty of time during the day to, you know...
Okay, Eunice, thank you. You can go now. We'll contact you again if we have any other questions.
While Alan's been talking to Eunice to try and find out the truth, his colleague, Sam, from the forensics department, has been busy working other angles, and she has some news for Alan.
This is Detective Alan, hello?
Hello, this is Sam from the forensics department. I'm calling about the Patrick Igunza murder.
Oh yes, hi Sam. I've been waiting for your call. Any luck identifying the fingerprints on the murder weapon?
Yes and no, Detective. As you can imagine, we confirmed that the suspect's fingerprints were indeed all over the knife.
You mean Lucy's?
Yes.
No wonder if it was a knife from her kitchen.
But we also found another set of prints on the knife that we can't identify.
Oh, really?
Yes. And get this, Detective Allen. There was yet another different and not yet identified set of prints on the victim's computer.
Interesting. So this means there might have been other people at the crime scene.
It's a strong possibility. Yes.
And have you had a chance to look at the deceased's phone records?
Not yet, but we are working on it, and we'll be sure to let you know as soon as we have more information.
Good work. Thanks a lot, Sam. I have to talk to Lucy urgently. I wonder what she can tell me about this horrible story.
And with that, we end this first episode of our new series. What's your impression of it so far? Let us know on Facebook. You can also discuss it with other listeners. And if you'd like to listen to the episode again, just go to dw.com/crimefighters. Be sure to tune into the next episode of On the Trail of the Poachers. Until then, goodbye.
And always before we go, a reminder of our main stories. Presidential and parliamentary elections took place on Wednesday in the Central African Republic. The International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda closes its doors today. We've also been hearing how Christians and Muslims in Cameroon come together to celebrate the new year. That's all we had for today. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Eunice Wanjiru, and on behalf of the entire AfricaLink team, I wish you all a great start into the new year.